Welcome to part one of topic two. We'll discuss the principle of individuality. Performance is generally governed by biomechanical, physiological, and psychological factors. They're the major applied sports sciences. At the current state of sports development, strengths and weaknesses in one or two areas can be compensated for and counterbalance each other. However, the situation is fast approaching where all areas are important and must be attended to. To ignore one area is to produce a restricted program. There are individual variations in the capacities involved in each of these three sports science areas. Those differences affect how one trains, the training response, and appropriate programming of the three areas. To ignore one of the areas is to reduce the quality of a program that might be offered, but then also to treat a group similarly, that is, to give them the same training program, the same restrictions, and treat two individuals as if they were clones, will also reduce the quality of a training program. If one turns to page 15 in the workbook, there's a graph here that illustrates just one factor where individual variations cause coaching to be somewhat complicated, but nevertheless have to be attended to. This is a diagram of three athletes in the same athletic environment at different stages of learning of a particular skill. The top one is someone who is already advanced in the skill, the second one is someone who is a fast learner, and the third one is someone who has difficulty in learning and is a slow learner. To expect these athletes to advance at the same rate and perform in a similar manner is unreasonable, and yet this is the situation that confronts any training group. Individualizing training requires complex organization and an understanding in the ways that each individual can improve most effectively. This illustration is solely for the phenomenon of learning a particular skill. Such wide ranges of variations in skill capacity, physiological capacity, and psychological strengths and weaknesses are common and need to be attended to when prescribing training programs and handling athletes in a coaching situation. The primary requirement for a coach is to understand the major areas where individual differences do occur and require radical changes in the way that programs are administered and presented to athletes. Individuality is an ominous principle. It signals the end of group instruction of the traditional form. Because the traditional form of coaching, that is, group instruction, is easiest, does not mean to say that it is the best. It is not acceptable to rationalize group practices as saying that those that are all that can be done as a way of justifying a current form of coaching. One has to change to accommodate the individual variations in each athlete so that all might progress at a satisfactory level and achieve the highest level of their individual capacities. On page 6 of the workbook, under the title, The Principle of Individuality, are 10 features which govern coaching decisions concerning individuality. We'll briefly run through these 10 items as a sample of the type of contemplation and consideration that needs to be given to good coaching and the programming that underlies such coaching. The first factor is the age of the learner. And traditionally in sports science, we've always considered chronological versus maturational age. And we even discriminate coaching into areas such as children's, teens, and adult coaching. Because of age differences, capacities to learn, and the growing growth of physical capacities, and also experience in doing exercise, there are different learning capacity and approaches to learning and training for each of these major groups, and particularly each individual. It's necessary to program the activities according to the age of an individual so that those activities will yield primarily positive outcomes and will have a minimum of negative experiences. Younger children certainly learn a lot faster than do mature adults. The reason for that learning is that there is nothing inhibiting learning from some already established activity. The second factor is the degree or stage of training. The more years experienced in training, the harder it will be to improve. Most physical capacities are directly affected by training itself. However, even after detraining, one does not return back to a totally untrained state. There appears to be a residual effect of training remaining in most activities. Generally, the more training that has been experienced, the better will be the performance, as long as one does not get into chronic over-fatigue. Some skills cannot be performed without training. It's necessary to have a physiological basis to be able to perform a skill to the form and the level of intensity that makes it appropriate as an activity that will transfer into a competitive setting. So the state of training of an individual is going to affect the type of training response which will be performed. That state of training varies with each individual, as some have light capacities so that they adapt very quickly and unfortunately get into the stage of exhaustion quickly. Others have large capacities and take a long time before they become overtrained. The third factor is the history of training and is somewhat allied to the degree or stage of training. The longer the history of training in a sport, the more elements that can be transferred to new skills and situations. A good history of training is what we call an experienced athlete. So the responses of experienced athletes to adapting to new situations or to unique circumstances which arise at a competition in training are likely to be better than those of an inexperienced athlete. Experienced athletes also know how to downplay the occurrence of irrelevant training activities and to focus on relevant activities, which means that their adaptation to training is more effective. The fourth factor is the skill level of the athlete. The skill level governs the speed of improvement. The higher the skill level of the individual, the slower will be the improvement. For example, it's a lot easier to improve from 20 feet to 40 feet in a shot put throw than it is to improve from 40 to 60 feet in the same activity. Athletes with low levels of skill have an opportunity to improve fast and dramatically as compared to those at a high level of skill. To compare absolute levels of improvement between elite athletes and beginner athletes would be foolish. These are some of the factors involved in the principle of individuality and the need to coach athletes on an individual basis. We'll continue these factors in part 2 of this presentation of topic 2.